FUBAR, radio worth paying for.
One, two, one, two.
Start to the show. That was Edwyn Collins, Down the Line. I like playing that because I've got that record at home and it's scratched, so I only come into work to play that. I might be playing that every week from now on. You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Welcome to the show. I'm Sean Hughes. Today, as I was going to say every day, but once a week. We've got some great guests in. I'm really looking forward to Peter Tatchell, who's the man who tried to make a citizen arrest on Robert Mugabe and got quite hurt in the process as well. So he's coming in. We've got a great comedian, Stephen N. Allen, and of course, Jerry from Big Brother this week. So let's see what he's got to say for himself. And then some live music coming on. So I'll play a track and then we'll bring Steve in. What do you fancy? I think we'll go for, let's go for Mogwai and Eagle Tax. Mogwai there. They obviously forgot to let the singer know they were recording a piece. No, I'm joking. They're an instrumental band from Scotland. They're very good. They did the music from, I think it was the French thing where people came back from the dead. I think it was called The Returned, but it was very good, but I could be wrong. Stephen N. Allen is here with me. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Nice to be here.
I don't think you meant that.
No, did I not sound like I meant it?
No, it didn't.
I thought I went in with passion. I could try again.
Well, no, you kind of went up quite high at the start, and then it really flattened out.
It is nice to be here.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. What's the N for a start? Can we not just get rid of that?
Well, no, because that way, right, if you just Google Steve Allen or Stephen Allen, not a chance. Loads of other people way better at being a Steve Allen than I am. Put the N in the middle, all of a sudden I'm the top search result. Okay. It's search engine optimization, isn't it? It's the world we live in.
And so what is the N, your middle name?
I don't have a middle name, But
hang on a second.
Don't blame it's my parents'
fault.
Don't
be controversial.
I know.
So what, everyone's got a second name. You're born with two Christian names.
No, you're not. You know what? My parents have either not told me or didn't get it right, because all I've got is the Stephen and the Alan. No middle name fun at all.
Well, no, I was born Sean Patrick, and then, like, what religion were you brought up? Obviously not Catholic.
Yeah, nothing really. Kind of Church of England-y by default.
I, weirdly, on Saturday night in Kettering, you go to various different gigs, and I'm on tour at the moment, and they said it's an art centre, and we got there, and it's actually a working church where they actually do sermons. So it was like the pews and all that. This is where the show was. And I remember doing a line saying I was brought up a Catholic, but I don't believe in God anymore. Pretty much like you guys, Church of England. But seriously, because you're born with two, and then, like, as Catholics, you're given, like, one for your confirmation then, which I think I initially picked Francis, and then I decided I'd go Julian, so who's to know? So let's give you a second name now. What would you like?
I don't know, though. I got through school by not having a middle name, which means, because there's that moment in school
where you picked on for not having a middle name?
No, it's the other way around. People got picked on for having a middle name, and I was getting through this thinking, whew, close one. And
so then, you were the one picking on people because they had more names?
I had nothing else to do, and was bigger than everyone, so why not?
Right.
But now I quite like not having a middle name, but that N is, normally it's the end of, it's Steve and Alan. I just moved the N across. I've added a space. I've not nicked any letters.
Yeah.
I've borrowed a space.
It's just really, like, it's like cheating the Scrabble, really.
That's exactly what I've done.
So, well, let's give you a middle name. What would you like?
Something that reflects my working class roots. So a nice working Larry.
Larry?
Is that working class?
Larry or Lowry?
No, Lowry, that would be way too posh. Larry's it's a working class name, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's Lawrence, though, so it isn't.
I'm rubbish.
So, all right, so what are your working class roots, then? Because you sound quite posh. Stephen N. Allen.
Right, but from Mansfield.
Right.
In Nottinghamshire.
You and Richard Bacon.
The main two, yeah. And Rebecca Adlington now, she's trying to get in on the little.
Is that the one who's got her nose done recently?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, more famous for being an Olympic-level swimmer. But people know her for the nose now.
Well, to be fair, more famous for being in I'm a Celebrity and crying.
You think... Is that more a higher status than being...
No, we weren't talking about status. You were saying known. Like, I think more people watched I'm a Celebrity than watched her swim. And what did she came second or something?
Well, she came second at the
swimming.
The one in this country, whatever they were called, the London Olympics.
Swimming.
4 years before she golded it up.
So she's just getting worse, though, isn't she?
And maybe she was crying when she was swimming, but you can't tell because you know.
Would have made the water a little bit deeper, a little bit harder.
Yeah,
that's probably
measure
what happened.
It before and after.
Or after Frankie Ball's cruel jipes at her.
Oh.
But so Mansfield, I've never been there, but it feels like it's a shithole.
Is your tour not going through Mansfield?
No.
Well, I'm sure there's at least one church you could do.
No, we do Nottingham, so that kind of covers
it's
that.
Half
basis.
An hour away, though.
Well, yeah. Is there a theatre in Mansfield?
Yes, there is, the Civic Theatre.
And what kind of stuff do they do there?
When I was growing up there, I saw Paul Daniels, so that puts it in perspective.
Yeah, for a start, why were you going to see Paul Daniels?
I was young, and what else comes to Mansfield?
But exactly,
no one comes to Mansfield.
I can understand, like, you know, middle age, there was nothing to do, but you were young, and you still went to see it. And did you enjoy the show? What age were you?
I think I must have been 10 or 11. And I did not get it. But to this day, I don't get magic anyway, so I think I was just wrong for that particular gig.
What do you mean you don't get magic?
I don't see the point. I mean, it's nothing other than just someone who's practiced something so much. The intro should be, I've practiced this so much, you won't see what I'm doing. And then they do it, and you don't see what they're doing, and you go, that's exactly what was promised.
Yeah, but that's...
There's no magic to it, isn't there?
No, there's no such thing as magic. I'd like to help you out with that, okay. Steve and Alan.
Because I'm not religious, so I don't know.
Yeah, religion isn't magic. I think you're very ill-informed about a lot of things.
It's not on Wikipedia. I've not really checked it.
So, no, Steve, I haven't come across you before, so why is that?
It's probably because of the lower league in which I'm doing gigs. I did realise that coming on as a guest on this show is a bit like getting a really, really bad footballer to be interviewed by David Beckham or something. To sit here and go, well, I'm a stand-up comedian, hello, you're kind of making me not look like a very good one.
But that's just nonsense. I want you to feel as welcome as possible. I just wanted to know, because didn't you, like, you were, well, you didn't win, you're a bit like... People from Mansfield don't win things. You came second in a competition, didn't you?
You know, Rebecca Adlington gets a silver, and I came second in a competition. That was the BBC one.
Well, you were the one who was in it, not me.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Right.
I don't really like... Winning. As a concept, no, I don't like winning, but I don't like comedy competitions. I disagree.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Comedy shouldn't be about trying to be better than everyone else who's on stage. You should just be trying to make people laugh, isn't it?
Well, I would go further and say hold a mirror up to society, but, you know, some comics don't seem to look at it that way. So, like, I know it sounds a bit trite, but what kind of comedy do you do then? Because, as I say, I haven't come across you.
It's mainly the stuff that I do is kind of topical stuff. There's a weekly gig where I do some topical stuff. And for the normal weekend stuff, the club gigs, you know, I'm an MC at normal club gigs or an act.
So is it mainly MCing then? That's a skill.
Yeah, mainly. But it's just because of the chattiness. You can just do your normal material, but in a kind of chatty way. And some people either don't like doing that or don't seem to work out that it is nothing other than a really small trick. So I think I get away with it more than other people, maybe.
Unlike Paul Daniels, who you just got bored with.
That guy. My brother-in-law, at the time, because I've got older families, went up on stage to be one of the participants.
Stooges.
That's the chap. And there's a bit where you've probably seen Paul Daniels do this, where he gets...
I haven't. I can tell you that now. I don't follow him.
Well, you've missed a trick, very much indeed. Because there's a bit where the people are sat down and then they get stuck to the seat and they can't get off the seat.
What, from hypnotism?
Well, it's meant to be like that. Yeah. And you think, does Paul Daniels have some sort of magic? Apparently what he does is, because they do some other trick first, and then he whispers in your ear, don't get up when I say get up. And that's that trick. So that's ruined magic for everyone.
But surely some people just go, fuck off, I'm getting up.
But it's set up so that if they do just walk off, he goes, right, thank you very much, thanks for being on stage. And if you just stand up and walk away, that's it, end of the game.
So he quite literally just says to people, don't get up when I say don't get up.
Yeah.
And then does he say, like, be a chicken and stuff like that? Or?
No, that's it. It's just pretends that they're stuck to the seat, and then the person's like, amazed, oh, wow, I'm stuck to the seat. And then eventually he releases them and they go back.
And do they get a little gift?
No, you get the joy of being on stage with Paul Daniels.
Does he not, like, you know, because obviously he's very good at whispering in people's ears, does he not go, I'll give you a pen later on? It's a little gift for doing that.
Maybe he whispers in a threatening way. I've always liked, because I didn't hear it, but I'd imagine it was like, don't you dare get up. I imagine if it was like that.
No, that's the one thing about him. He's not kind of intimidating. But so, wouldn't it be lovely if, like, so he's whispering in your brother-in-law's ear, going, whatever you do, don't get up. Yeah. If he just shouted, what's in it for me? See, that would be a much better show.
That would have been better. I would have enjoyed that as the 10-year-old Mansfield kid I was.
And so that's the last time you went to see a magic show?
It is, yeah.
And so what was the last show you saw, like, that you enjoyed?
Well, this is the other flip side of doing gigs, is I get to be at gigs every single weekend. I always love those. I always love the comedy gigs that I'm at. I think one of the best sides of doing this is, I mean, it must be different when you're on a tour, because you're just, and it's just yourself, but I get to watch other comedians.
Thanks for coming in. It is quite lonely on the road.
I mean, don't cry. You're making the swimming pool fuller. It's terrible. Every comedy gig. I can enjoy a comedy gig if it's good or bad. You know, if you're watching someone not do well, that's just as entertaining.
Did you start off doing normal jobs first?
Not really. No, I did.
Stephen N. Allen, tell me.
I did travel news reading, and
so how did you get into that? Did you say you went into a radio? That's for radio, yeah.
Yeah, on radio.
Just went in, there's a big pile up, and says, "Well, why don't you come in and tell us about it?" And
I just rushed in. There's been a pile up. That voice needs to be on radio. I was writing jokes for other people first.
And did you have a travel news voice?
No, I'd like to think I just sound like this.
No, don't try and put it on. But that's what I mean. Like, certain people would, like, I've got a travel news voice.
What would you sound like when you do travel news then?
The A1 is packed. Like that.
Good.
So it's completely different to my normal voice.
It's very different.
Because I take it very, very serious.
What happens if the A1 wasn't packed? If it was more of a lighthearted, there's a chicken on the road type situation?
But I've never heard that come up on a traffic thing.
Keep listening. That happens every so often. Animal in the roadway is one of the most common problems you get. Anywhere where there's a field and a road, you could get an animal in it, and then there's some sort of animal-related joke to be had.
Well, speaking of animals, I can tell you spring has definitely sprung, because I've got a pond at home and attached to the moat to the house, and it's...
Rebecca Adlin's doing laps.
Yeah, I let her in. I don't care what she looks like. Go on, have fun there, love. It's fine. I don't care where... stop asking me to time you. You're not any good anymore. But the point is that, well, there's two sad stories. Well, one very sad story is I bought a load of fish and they all bred in my pond. And
is that a sad story?
No, this isn't a sad story. Right. And like goldfish and carp and koi. And then I went away for the weekend and a heron ate all of them bar two.
Ooh.
So I really don't like herons.
Yeah.
And I was going out to feed the last two, who obviously are the same sex because they're not getting it on.
Right. And they've got survivor guilt as well. So
yeah, without a shadow.
Ruins the sex life.
And so I was kind of going, the pond seems a bit empty. So I was putting in some fish food yesterday. 58 frogs actually having sex.
What? Right. Did you watch? How long did you watch them having sex
for?
Well,
I tell you, for quite a while, because I just thought, oh, there's a frog, and then you realise he's actually on top of another frog, and then when they scurry, like they're together, and then I was getting some rubbish out of the pond, and accidentally two of the frogs came up with it. I obviously put them back in, but they were like, so that's how they have sex. They just jump on each other and hang on for dear life.
And so they were all paired off. It wasn't just like one long column of 50-something frogs.
They weren't in a big line, but the point is, they're very good at camouflage, so there could have been thousands in there.
Ooh. Yeah, you don't want to go, poor old Rebecca Addington swimming around that. Oh.
But do you not like frogs?
I've never really thought about them. They're fine, aren't they? I don't have
a problem. Well, Steve, so far we're getting, like you know, it's Sunday, and Sunday's a day of reflection, yeah. I'll give you that. Okay. But so far, you've just told us about various animals dying in car crashes, the fact that you don't like Phil Collins, you probably don't like him either, Phil Daniels. Do you like Phil Collins?
What has happened?
Do you like Phil Collins?
Have I blacked out and missed an entire interview? No, I don't think I do. I mean, I prefer frogs.
You better tell me something you like, because you've been very negative about life so far.
I'm
not having it, Stephen N. Al. So just tell me something nice.
I said I like people dying at gigs. That was fun to watch. I said when a gig's not going well, I can still find it enjoyable.
But yeah, enjoyable. Just tell me something that you're really passionate about.
Big fan of custard creams.
Right.
They're the best food ever.
What age are you, Stephen Allen?
I'm 37.
And you're a big fan of custard creams?
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like you're judging me in some way now.
I am. I'm sorry.
Your hobby is watching frog sex. I dunk a biscuit
it's
every so often.
It's not a hobby. Well, it might become one, but like it was a brand new thing. Look, it just meant that like people were very happy in my pond, so I was happy that, you know.
And you were stood there with a stopwatch because of Rebecca, so you might as well time them.
Well, yeah, and they were there for quite a long time. And the two fish didn't seem that bothered, so that was the good thing about it. So I wouldn't imagine you're passionate about custard creams. So what would you like? Tell us your big passion. Are you married? Have you got kids?
I don't really know if I've got a.
You don't
passion.
Know if you've got kids.
I don't know if I've got kids. You know what it's like in Mansfield? No, you don't, because you've never been. You should go there. Imagine a town like your moat and the frogs are people.
Right.
That is what happens in Mansfield.
So you're not going back there very... Are your parents still there?
They are. This is just going to get even sadder, though. They're not well, but yeah.
Oh,
this is
going to
be the most depressive interview ever.
I better play a tune. We'll play Enola Gay, which was the... this is OMD, but do you know what Enola Gay is?
No, I'm thinking some sort of ship thing, or am I wrong about that?
You're very wrong about that.
Right.
It was the plane that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. Fine. So let's keep everyone down for a little bit. You better cheer up, Stephen and Alan. That's the new single there from Disclosure. Only joking, OMD. One of the first bands I ever saw live. Stephen and Alan, what was one of the bands you... What was the first band you saw live?
Blur, when I was at university.
Hang on, what age are you now then?
37, still since the last time you asked.
Yeah, but Blur, so... What age were you then?
18... Because of university age, yeah, 18-ish.
Right, so you were kind of kept in the basement and just allowed out to see Paul Daniels.
The only people who gigged in Mansfield was Paul Daniels. We don't even know why he turned up, but he did not sing. So
were you not allowed to travel to Nottingham?
Well, that was the big city. I'm not sure about that. Even now, I still get scared about going there.
Yeah, we all get scared about Nottingham, to be fair. So now, Stephen and Alan, you do various topical shows. So you keep abreast of the news. Have you got a little formula that you do where you see a news story, you go, that's my angle?
I have a filter straight away. If I see anything that I think I don't want to do jokes about, anything where it could be turned into a nasty story, anything with this negativeness, get rid of it.
Yeah,
I don't want any deathy story.
You're a very positive fellow.
I'm so positive, yeah. I made Hiroshima sound good in comparison.
Right.
That's a tricky angle. But yeah, so I find a story where no one's going to get offended. I don't like to try and...
You don't like to offend?
No. I think if I can make a good point, then that's all valid. But if any, you know, there are a lot of comedians who would just think, oh, Jimmy Savile, there's going to be some jokes. Really, I don't see that.
Well, tell us the last valid point you made that you're really proud of.
Last night I was doing a thing about... I don't know why... The missing aeroplane. I don't know why aeroplanes... Why you can't...
Have you started playing that game yet where you just look up in the sky and go, is that it?
No, I've not. Have you found it yet?
No, but it's a good game.
It's, yeah.
I wonder if that's it.
High stakes. But the fact that you can manually turn off all the communications and GPS...
It was aliens. Let's just get over that, right?
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was aliens.
That'll be in the front page of a newspaper tomorrow. It'll be a tabloid, but they will quote you on it. But your name would be really small, so it looks proper.
So did you...
I think the valid point is that you shouldn't be able to turn off the communications on an aeroplane. You shouldn't be able to put an aeroplane in airplane mode. It doesn't seem... Why? You're not going to be able to put it on an aeroplane.
Well, I know the answer to this, if you want to know.
Go on, then.
It's for safety. So you're able to turn everything off in case there's an electrical fault. You have to be able to turn everything off.
But surely, yeah, you land it, you turn take the keys out, right?
Yeah, at the end. I don't think there's keys.
Is there not?
Have you not been on a plane? You can see the pilot coming on with his keys going, all right, it's going to be a great old trip.
You can travel to Mansfield without
the ignition, a plane. The ignition's really, hang on, we're going to need a push. But so do you talk about, would you be worried, like, because obviously there's people's lives.
Yes.
So that would concern you, go, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I'd make sure nothing glib happens if I'm talking about that story. Because the gigs where I do the topical stuff tends to be this weekly Tuesday night gig.
Where is it? Tell me.
Waterloo. It's downstairs in the Slug and Lettuce. Waterloo.
Mama. I was hypnotised when I was
so
a kid.
So many people died at that as well. We shouldn't be gigging at Waterloo. That's offensive.
I was hypnotised as a child, and this every time I hear someone say Waterloo, I've been programmed to go, Mama.
If I'd have realised that, we would have moved the gig to somewhere else on the
South
Bank.
I'd love to go, but I'd just ruin it for you. You'd be doing your topics, and I'd go, Mama. So you do that every week with
yes.
a bunch of years.
Yeah, there's three of us, and it's the same people every single gig. Me, Eric McElroy, and Christian Riley.
Right.
And he does, Christian Ryan does topical songs.
Why no ladies?
I don't know. It's just the way that their parents interacted when they had kids. It's not our fault that we don't have
Stephen
those chromosomes.
And Alan, why do you not have ladies on the bill?
Well, no, we don't not have ladies.
You do not have ladies.
We have three men.
Yeah. Why no ladies? I'm very good. I'm very much like Paxman today, aren't I?
Very much like. I mean, you've got the beards coming on as well.
So, Stephen and Alan, why? Why no ladies?
In terms of
the
XY chromosomes, we are bringing at least three Xs, so that represents women.
Well, I think you could get into politics because you're just avoiding the question and answering other questions. Listen, thank you so much for popping in.
Good
luck with it. And you're going up to Edinburgh this year on the Free Fringe?
Yeah, doing the topical show, some news live show.
Right, well...
That's it.
Well, I hope people watch out for that. Stephen N. Allen. Don't, if you're Googling him, put in the N, otherwise it's big, big trouble. We'll be right back. I'd imagine there was a sweepstake on when I would play that on my Sunday show. Morrissey, every day is like Sunday. Now, it's Big Brother time. Jerry, how do you pronounce your name?
Jerry Sturgiopoulos.
See, I'd never got that.
I know, I have to chop it.
Well, Sturge doesn't
Jerry
sound...
Jerry Sturge, that's it.
But Jerry Sturge doesn't sound very Greek, does it? The Sturge, the rest of it sounds Greek.
The Poulos is a sign off. Okay. That's why we all have a Poulos after our name.
Is because why?
It's a sign off. It's the sign off that. And you know, in Birds of the Feather, they take the mickey and they say Papadopoulopoulos. And yeah. I'm like, no, don't say that about Greek names. It's
racist.
Poulos.
It's just racist. Well, Jerry, no. I hope you wrote in to ITV and complained.
I should.
So now, because obviously we have someone on from Big Brother every week. And of course I remember you. But what was your biggest thing in Big Brother that people would remember you by?
I think I was a good deal because I was the Greek gay geek. So you get three stereotypes in one. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, and so were you the first gay?
No, there were plenty. I was the first. I was the first gay kiss because it was a funny year. It was the year that they put 12 women on the first day, and then they were dripping the men in. So the next day they put a straight boy, and then I went in on the next Friday. And they put two gay boys, so the straight boy was really frustrated.
Could you tell straight away that he was gay?
The other gay guy, yes. But unfortunately, he didn't last very long. He was only there for 2 weeks, so I stayed there for 11 weeks.
So what was your secret?
And I was
of your
the
success?
Only gay in the village. I was actually quite a nice human being, you know.
But that doesn't really account for much on BB.
No, but it's a very, very, it's a very interesting thing. And I would say the most interesting thing, Big Brother, what happens to us before and what happens after.
Right, so you were born in Greece and you came over came over to Edinburgh originally.
Yes,
so
I was Edinburgh University for many years. So I was overqualified and unemployable. I studied history of art, then I did classical archaeology, and then my PhD was in the... boring stuff, you
but
know.
Were you learning English in Greece when you were growing up?
Well, I did, but you see, the English that we learn in Greece it has nothing to do with the English that you speak in this country. You know, nobody says.
Well, it's not Cockney rhyming.
Well, I mean, people say "Cheers, mate." You know, and I was taught to say, you know, all these polite things.
Hello
How
there.
How do you do? Yes.
Like, hello.
And then it was a bit of a cultural shock because I thought all this English that I was taught in Greece is completely useless. Nobody says "How do you do?"
Well, your English is brilliant, but. So, you were like, 18 or something when you came over?
I was 17 and a half, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And did you know you were gay then?
Oh, yes.
Because, I don't know much about Greek culture, but except for the fact that they invented homosexuality.
We didn't invent it. I would say there was homosexuality, that's the archaeologist now coming out. Okay. You know, in Assyria and Babylonia, there was homosexual behavior. In ancient Egypt as well, we have frescoes. But the Greeks were the first to record it.
Right.
So you literally have...
porn.
Dialogues. You know, you have Plato, who is a student of Socrates, talking about Socrates' boyfriend, Alcibiades, and Socrates was 70. So, you know, good for him.
And but I don't know the culture. So, how are Greek people in general with gays?
It's very hypocritical, and I don't mean to slag off my beloved nation, my home country. But what happens is, you know, it was very, very open-minded in ancient times. As I said, you know, it was very, very normal to be bisexual in ancient Athens. Sparta as well. Sparta now is the big film, the 300.
Right.
Homosexuality was huge because they fought in pairs. So one holds the shield and the other one holds the spear. So you fight for both and I protect both. So they were all couples in the army. It's very scandalous, but that's the way it was. So then we have Christianity coming and, you know...
Those
Greece,
Christians.
Exactly. And you see it comes through, you know, Palestine, Asia Minor, Greece. Greece is one of the earliest areas that adopts Christianity. And this is the big clash. You have Christianity that says, homosexuality is a bad thing, you know, family produces offspring, more Christians. And now Greeks are very confused.
Right.
And we've been confused for 20 centuries now.
Is that what brought the economy down?
No. The economy, don't even start me on the Greek economy. Because, you see, I've lived here since 1994. And if I go back to Greece and somebody slags off the British, I get very, very defensive. Like, no, that's my home. You know, you dare.
How do they slag off the British?
They have stereotypes. They
go, give us our marbles back.
Okay. Well, no. They think that every English woman is a nurse, which is totally crap. Because, you know... nurses in this country are Filipino usually, and Indian doctors. So every British woman in Greek brains is a nurse and says,
"Going
to Greece."
Do they watch a Carry On film or something?
No, the thing, all the English women. are looking for a Greek guy with a moustache to give them an orgasm. It's a silly Valentine, circa 1980, whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So they do have their own stereotypes. And then I come here, and people take the mickey of Greece, and I'm like, oh, how dare you to say that? But I've run out of excuses because,
so
you
know... You sound like a bit of a troublemaker, really, Joe. You're looking for an argument with every nation.
No, it's just I'm defensive of Greece, and I'm defensive of Britain, you know, in the same way.
No,
because I've lived here for too long, and, you know, I've become very polite. When I go back to Greece, I wait in a queue, and nobody does that.
Right.
You go in the taxi, and they start smoking on your face, and it's really, really different.
Sounds great.
You should move.
Go over there. And so like, you seem like a really nice guy. What possessed you to like destroy your life somewhat by going on to Big Brother?
Insecurity. It's a lot of acceptance issues. I would say in my year there were like 15 people, and three of us were
what's
too
that
big
thing?
Now I cannot see you now. No, three people out of 15 were adopted.
Right.
That's quite interesting. That's a very high percentage of adopted people. I was, for example, rejected by my father because of my homosexuality. So there is a lot of issues. Well, actually, worse now after I've been to all the tabloids for a whole summer.
Okay.
So what happens is you try to gain acceptance. So you think if I get accepted for 6 million viewers, because back in the day, you know, it was a huge thing when I did it, you know, with Davina and Dermot. And
but so were you using it as a springboard to do other things?
Yes and no. I had written a book at that point, and I thought, well, if I manage to sell the book out of it, that
about
would be the cherry on the cake.
Homosexuality in the army.
No. My book was actually... I read chick flicks. I call it cliterature.
Right. So what makes you write cliterature?
Who knows women better than gay men?
Women?
No, actually, they don't, because women no offense, women, but they tell their gay best friend a lot of stuff that they would never tell their girlfriends.
But so, are most your mates women, then?
All my mates are, we call them fag hags.
Right.
Yes, and they tell me all the dirty stuff that you straight men would love to hear. Disgusting stuff. And then I tried to edit it down to
books. There's no censorship in this, so what disgusting stuff do they tell
you? Well, I know you know, you don't have any... Oh. Do you want to really know?
Yes.
Yeah, well, recently two girls were... I was shocked. The gay man was shocked.
Okay.
They were telling me about sperm flavors, to put it, you know, scientifically. And then they were saying, oh, you know, Mike's boyfriend's was milky, but have you ever tried spicy one? I was like, la, 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 la. The gay guy was shocked.
Yeah, and so what has that to do with your appetite, or is it just a genetic thing?
I think it has to do with what you eat. The legend says that if you take a lot of zinc in your diet via oysters and stuff, but then it will be salty. Then if you eat, you know, it probably has nutrition, has to do with cum flavor.
Right. So
I can't believe we're talking about this, but my new book is about sex. I'm reading a lot of stuff about that.
My sperm just tastes like eggs.
I wonder why.
Why eat a lot of eggs?
Do you have a wife or a girlfriend?
No, I think because they... I've got a chicken.
Well, actually, I get lots of women saying to me that, you know, they... You know, some women don't like oral sex, you know.
What?
Some women don't.
What is the problem then?
And they get a lot of pressure not only to give oral sex, a.k.a. BJs, but actually they are asked to swallow.
Yeah.
And I say to them, okay, ask him to swallow his own semen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if he does it, then you do. But, you know, they don't do it, so why should she do it, you know?
Well, yeah, no, I think it's
21st
a fair point.
Century feminism.
No, it's a fair point, but, I don't think I've ever even, like, went, I'll just have a little, you know, the way you
do it. A little test.
So what does your sperm taste like?
I have never tried it. Seriously, I have no interest.
I thought you were debauched. You haven't even tried your own sperm.
No, I have not. I'm not interested.
And so, you brought out this book. So,
well, this one is the dating one. The sex is what happened. Well, so this is how to get a man.
So the one you were talking about was when you were in Big Brother, you'd already written that.
Yes, I had written this one actually.
Right.
And I thought, well, you know, if I manage to find a publisher out of Big Brother,
yeah,
it's more complicated than that, because you see, reality television opens many doors but closes as many doors. So I left my job in the summer, you know.
So what were you doing?
I had a very serious job. I evaluate paintings. I'm like the Antiques Roadshow. You bring me paintings and I tell you how much it's worth.
And so...
For a very big auction house, a very famous auction
Sotheby's.
House.
Sotheby's.
Yes. Well, the chairman of Sotheby's. Right. So what was his private catalogue? Well, they literally said to me, well, you're too high profile. Which was a very polite way to say, you're Z-list, we don't want you anymore.
But so how do you...
So I lost my job.
I'm sorry, but...
Oh, it's okay. But, I'm over it.
But when you... So can you just look at any painting then and go... Or would you have to look at the history?
You have to specialise, yeah. I would do late 19th century, early 20th century art, especially sculpture as well. I'm very good.
Right.
But you have to learn everything. You have to learn silver and, you know, all sorts of boring. That's porcelain. Boring, yeah. I find porcelain very boring, but I had to do it.
But those auctions, I still love those.
It's very interesting, because if two people want the same thing, that's where it kicks, yeah.
Well, listen, we'll chat on more, but we'll play a track. Should we put something on? Actually, this is for you. We brought in one gay song.
Ah.
Sugar Babes, I think Mark 1. There's 18 different various Sugar Babes in there. Jerry Sturgiopoulos, did I get it right?
Sturgiopoulos.
I thought I did pretty well there.
No, you didn't.
So you walked out of Big Brother.
I did, yes. On week 11, I just had enough antidepressants via the diary room and I thought it's time for me to go.
Did you say antidepressants?
Oh, yes.
So you were on antidepressants?
Totally.
And were you,
what do you
that,
see?
Was
what
that about
see?
Week four you went on them?
I think around July I started being, right. You know, really. Listen, I don't blame them because I had issues with depression before.
Yeah, but also antidepressants do make you quite suicidal as well.
I don't think so because my body was quite... Yeah, at the start, but I was on and off antidepressants all my life because it goes back. Right. It's a family thing. it makes you who you are. I mean, if you, it's never gonna, there is never gonna be treatment for depression. You just learn to make it part of your personality.
Well, you seem like a very,
I seem very, very happy.
Are you high on antidepressants now?
No, I'm not. I mean, I only 20 milligrams of Prozac.
Oh, that's all right.
Not today.
That's barely touching the surface.
The thing is, I'm one of those depressive people that when I'm depressed, I don't want anyone to see me like that.
Okay.
So I don't go out, I don't pick up the phone, and I don't like to, you know, to make other people.
Damn.
I'm one of the.
So
yeah,
you're just talking about it on the radio.
So I just keep it, you know. It's, I don't. You know, people should talk about mental illness.
Not on a comedy radio show.
Oh well, you know, but it's, depression can be very funny.
Okay, right. I'll say no. Yeah, no. It's
Ruby Wax actually wrote a very funny book, which I read recently about her depression.
And you know, could you relate to her?
Totally. Yeah, and I think more books should be written about, you know, the funny aspects of depression. Well, no, there isn't enough. There's a gap in the market, if anybody, you know.
But so you're alluding to what we see on Big Brother is not quite what?
No.
So
no, you only see the tip of the iceberg.
So what would be a big revelation for listeners?
Let's say somebody tried to kill themselves in the diary room, but I'm not going to tell you who, and I have signed a contract not to say.
So you have to kind of...
Not me. No, it wasn't me.
No,
I'm not that crazy.
I'm just saying you have to sign a contract when you go out saying you can't say anything.
Yeah.
And that's forever.
The funny thing is, to be... there is, back in the days, you know, which was a huge thing, Big Brother, you know, imagine they would send us to France and we had to hide for 3 weeks and we'll have to come back with wearing masks and towels over our heads. Because, you know, the tabloids really want... I cost them a fortune. I was going horse riding. I thought I might not make it into the show, but I'm going to cost Endemol a lot of money. So what I'm saying is, you know, there was 80 different stages of auditions.
Yeah.
So they want somebody who is mad enough to do this bungee jumping thing.
You told them as well that you're on antidepressants.
Yes. I was there. So I wouldn't blame them at all. But the reality is, it's a prison with lots of cameras. That's what it is. With many colors, but it's a prison.
But with the contract, so they say to you, you cannot ever talk about our secrets.
That's a standard thing for every television show.
But they say, take it to your grave.
Well, you can change the names and claim it's fiction.
Okay. That's
what I'm doing in my new novel. I'm writing a novel and I have a lot of stuff. But in the beginning of the book, you know, my publishers have insisted to put, you know, no relationship with real
events. So, Joe, you're kind of a... Because, I was reading about you and you're really, like, one of the books was, like, really big in Italy.
87,000 copies. That's a lot of books. It came number 8 in hardbacks.
So do you go over there and swan in and go...
I had my own MTV show.
So what was that? Just like a VJ?
But they had no idea who I am. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, in Italy, it became a bestseller and it made my... not me. My publishers became very rich. Not me, unfortunately. But what I'm saying is they have no idea about Big Brother. That's why I'm saying to you that this reality television, you know, it can be a very detrimental thing if you want to be taken seriously.
And you obviously...
Not that it's a serious book. It's a very funny book, though.
Yeah. So this is, you know, Treat Them Mean and Keep
Them
Keen.
And Keep Them Keen.
So this is the dating rule.
That's a dating... Oh, I hate the word rules. It's... You just give them...
This is what it says on the front of your book.
I know. So, it wasn't... It was... Yeah, it was my editor. I think we're going to do a new edition paperback, which I want to take this rule... Because it's a very American concept that you put a set of rules and women have to follow it. I want women to trust their own instinct. And, you know, if you give them a little push, and if they become just a little bit more assertive after reading this book...
this is for women.
Totally. And that's why I'm going to take it away from you and give it to Amanda after the end of the show.
No, I've already...
You shouldn't read it. No,
I've already
not.
Spunked all over. Apparently, I had a lot of asparagus earlier on.
Oh, that's why...
So what are the tips then?
Listen, this was a big American trend, the market for self-help, dating, you know, love books.
Yeah.
But then I thought, I had to read them all, you know, when I was doing my PhD, I had
and
to read everything.
Bits from each.
Still the best bits.
Yeah.
But then I thought, some of them do give very good advice, you know, they were written by psychologists, but they're just not funny.
Right.
And I thought dating is a hilarious thing, and let's write a book which is quite funny. And this book, if you don't agree with what I'm saying, at least you're going to have fun reading it.
And so are you dating? Are you in a couple at the moment?
When you write, you know, my new book is about sex, and I don't have any sex. So, you know, it just kills your sex life, your dating life, because you become too analytical. You know, I start dividing men according to the types I describe to the book. Then I play by... Also, women are much easier to follow things like, I've got a chapter on body language.
Right.
And men, I realize that, straight or gay men, doesn't matter. Men don't have such a huge arsenal of moves to attract men. We're quite limited.
So what should men... See, this is what I mean. Why is it for women? Like, what should men look out for, these body language from women, to know that they... take their tops off.
You know that. No, of course not. I advise exactly the opposite. You know, you should never put all the goods in one front window display. You know, if you show, you know, tits, you know, you shouldn't show arse. If you show arse, you should, you know, cover up with a blouse. You know, you should just tease them a little bit. I mean, the whole concept of treat them mean and keep them keen is not be a bitch, is be a little bit unavailable. Have your own friends, have your own nights with your friends.
But are you talking about, like, oh, when someone texts you, don't text back for 2 days? That kind of nonsense.
No, a few hours, though.
Right.
Yeah, don't you think so? Because you men, I'm a man as well, but men enjoy the chase. And I see it as an archaeologist.
But
the woolly mammoth did not come to your cave and say, come and get me. You know, you had to go there and fight for your meat.
But do you
and
feel,
we have this instinct of the
do you feel that men
hunter.
Just want the chase, though, and then they get
totally
bored?
I love the chase. And
are you chasing at the moment, then?
Yes, all the time. You know, my life will be completely meaningless if I was... I'm always chasing somebody, and this is the most interesting relationship, the one that are not, return. You know, you just chase and you don't catch the... But you remember the
but are
do you play
enough?
Football? Do you play sports?
Do I look like I play sports?
I... No.
Thanks.
But you must have played once upon a time.
Yeah, in Bethlehem.
Well, do you remember a game? And I'm sure it wasn't a game that you won easily. It was the game that you had to really, really try hard, and the opponents were quite strong. And this is our psychology, that we only remember the games that we have to fight hard to win.
But are you good at then going, that's a lost cause, I'll give up on that?
No, because I have this great system, which I call the blackjack system.
Blackjack?
And basically you have to blow hot and cold.
Well, we do
so
anyway,
I have specific, you know. Oh, I can read it to you. No, it's a whole chapter. But what
you're
I'm saying,
you're not reading the whole chapter, Jerry.
No, I'm not. But
tell
what I'm saying
right
is,
now.
You know, there is actions that you know you blow hot, and there is actions that you blow cold.
Well, give us an
EG.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Then.
I have to find it.
No, but just from your head.
Ages
did
ago.
You write this book?
Yes, I did. But you know, I'm writing a new book now. I can't remember.
What's
it
your
now.
New book about then?
My
that's just the
about,
novel.
Oh, there is the blowing hot actions.
Okay.
So blowing hot action, it's a very simple thing. For example,
this is for women. This is tips for
women to men.
Okay.
So I'm saying compliment him on his outfit, even if it is hideous. So that's a little blowing hot action.
But that's
blowing,
like just being sarcastic, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's a compliment.
Yeah, but
even if you
hideous.
Don't believe that it's a nice outfit, so, you say something nice.
But so you're saying the beginning of a relationship should be just steeped in lies.
No, but if you start a relationship, you know, for example, with talking about your exes and talking about all your problems at work, it's you know, so you should always
leave
keep
that for
something
the second
for the second year, perhaps, you know, and that's why you have friends to make their life hell, to tell them all your problems. When you're dating somebody, they don't want to know your problems at work with your boss and stuff like that. And this is what I'm saying. That
yeah, but that's fairly
even
obvious
when you're
stuff,
in a relationship, you know, and one of the things I say
give
in
us
the
some
end,
gold, Jerry.
So do you want the cold actions?
Well, yeah, give us cold
during
action.
A dinner date, ask him about the food before you order. When he tells you what he thinks you should have, say, thank you very much, good idea. When the waiter comes, choose exactly the opposite.
Right, so you're just looking for trouble in relationships, really?
No, they shouldn't take you for granted. It's not looking for trouble, it's being a little bit of a chase, you know. Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, as you said, you know, wait for, you know, 2 days before you reply the text message, but don't reply
still,
the text
I'm
message
I'm still waiting,
immediately.
Jerry, I'm still waiting.
For the text message?
Yeah.
Perhaps you have to read my book.
Well, I'm not a lady, so...
that's why I'm going to take it away from you afterwards.
I know you're very
this
determined.
Book has to be hidden from men.
I don't have it. So
all the tricks of the trade are there.
So what else are you up to then besides writing?
I'm actually nobody knows about it, but I'm opening a shop. I'm
Woo-hoo.
Opening a Greek pie shop.
A Greek pie
yes.
shop. Okay,
yes.
Where are you opening that?
In Soho.
Right.
But at the moment, I'm trying to find a place which is not £150,000 a year for rent. They're very expensive.
But And so what, just selling Greek pies?
Yes.
But
have you ever had a Greek pie?
Well, I'm vegetarian, so... Oh,
perfect for you, because they're vegetarian, most of them.
What, so what...
Do you like feta cheese and spinach?
It's all right.
In a pie?
Well, they've already got it in that other thing.
Yeah, but it's I've got the recipes. You know, I spent 2 years finding the recipes,
You
can get them in some Lebanese restaurants, but you don't have anything exclusively serving that.
But there's loads of Greek restaurants, though.
Yeah, but I'm not opening a... I never said I'm opening a restaurant.
No, you said a pie
opening
shop.
A shop, yeah.
So it's all purely for people
to... It's takeaway, yeah. Right. You know, that's the intelligent thing. It's very cheap, £2.80.
Where did Greece get the arrogance to call a salad after themselves?
As a Greek salad?
Yeah.
I think...
Because that's a very basic salad.
Tomato, cucumbers, onions, feta cheese.
Yeah.
I think it's the feta cheese that makes the oregano makes the difference.
Yeah, but like how? What? Like it's no Irish salad or English
salad. We never call it Greek salad in Greece. You call it Greek salad, so yeah. I wouldn't
so
say
you just
that,
call it salad.
Yeah, we call it Horiatiki, which means village salad.
Well,
it's one of many salads in Greece.
I've learned lots from you today, Jerry. Listen, good luck with the book. So that's out now. Treat Them Mean and Keep Them Keen.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll watch out
so
for...
So single girls with a Kindle. They sold out. Now we have to print more, so only Kindle at the moment.
You're showing off now. You're showing
off,
Jerry. But listen, you've been an absolute delight. And
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You seem so level-headed. Because I'd imagine some BB people have car crash kind of personality.
There is many people that are homeless, and you know, there are some tragic stories. But this is a comedy station, and you don't want to hear the tragic stories.
Well, we've already talked about antidepressant. But listen, you've been an absolute delight. Let's play a track. I think we'll go for the National with Fake Empire. Could be Greece. Could be Greece, though.
Staying super late tonight, picking apples, making pies. Put a little something in our lemonade and take it with us, we'll laugh away in a fake empire. We'll half awake in a fake empire. Tiptoe through our shiny city with our diamond slippers on. Do our gay ballet and dance. Bluebirds on our shoulders. We're half awake in a fake empire. We're half awake in a fake empire. Thank you.
a beautiful song. That's Fake Empire by The National, one of the best bands going now. Now, I very seldom will say it's an absolute... I'll say it's a delight to meet people, but it's an absolute honour to have Peter Thatchell in, who is... Peter, would you describe yourself as a human rights campaigner?
Yeah, because the work I do encompasses much more than LGBT rights. It encompasses civil liberties, democracy, both here and in other countries overseas.
But yeah, so that's the thing. Like, so, like, when did you become like so kind of like principled, or were you always that way?
Well, believe it or not, I've been campaigning for human rights for almost 50 years. I began in 1967 at the age of 15. My first campaigns were against the death penalty, which existed at that time in my hometown of Melbourne, Australia.
Right.
And then for Aboriginal civil and land rights, and then against Australia's involvement in the war in Vietnam.
This is when you were 15?
15, 16, 17.
So yeah. Were your parents like that then?
Not at all.
So where did you get
that
from?
The exact opposite.
So you were...
Nothing. I left school at 16. Nothing in my family background prepared me at all for doing human rights activism. My family had no interest in politics. In fact, I'd be prepared to say they had no social conscience whatsoever.
Right. Was that slight rebelling against them then?
Who knows? I remember at the age of 11 in 1963 being deeply influenced by the killing of four young black girls in a church in Birmingham, Alabama, in the United States. A racist Ku Klux Klan type group threw a bomb into the church and killed these four young girls about my own age. And I can remember just being so horrified when I heard those news reports about that bombing. How could anyone kill another human being, let alone four young girls in a church on a Sunday morning?
But see, what's beautiful about you is most people would have had that thought and they would have gone, but there's nothing we can do about it. But you've spent your life trying to do something about it, you know, just in general. Which is like, you know, sometimes that must be so tiring and kind of, you must think, what's the point when, like, you get nowhere after a lot of hard work? So what keeps you going?
Well, you're right. A lot of the battles that I've fought have been for very marginal fringe issues. Well, that's where they began, like campaigning for gay rights, campaigning for independence for East Timor. You know, these campaigns... A lot of people thought at the beginning, they're hopeless, you'll never win. But I have the long-term vision, you know, inspired by people like Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Silver Pankhurst. I had the vision that, you know, one day justice would shine through. And so you're right, I did have to steel myself for lots of setbacks, delays, obstructions. But here we are today, and so many of the battles I fought all those years ago have been won.
And does that give you an immense sense of pride, or you just go, no, it's not ego, I'm just, this is as a human being, I should be doing this?
Yeah, it's the latter. You know, I just feel if you have a conscience and you believe in fair play, you should do something. Not everybody can do what I've done, you know, like attempting a citizen's arrest of President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe twice. But I don't expect everybody to do that. But, you know,
but I guess,
everybody can do something.
I guess people would think, like, you know, I understand where you're coming from. And as I say, you're a principled man. But you get people saying, well, you just did that for a publicity stunt. You must have got that leveled at you completely, yeah?
Absolutely. But, you know, every campaigner gets that, you know.
Yeah.
You do the campaigns to raise public awareness and to put people in power under pressure to change. And that's been the tactic of... Everyone from the Black Civil Rights Movement in the United States to the Chartists to the trade union movement to people who have been campaigning for civil liberties and human rights in every country in the world.
And you went into politics for a bit and that didn't quite work out, did it? So did you want to be a politician? Do you think you
No.
Could...
No.
So you just why did you go for it then?
Well, those who don't know, I stood as a Labour parliamentary candidate in the Bermondsey by-election in 1983. Which by general consensus was the most violent and certainly the most homophobic election in British political history. At least in the 20th century anyway.
Was that from the press or just in general day-to-day?
It was a combination of the press, rival parties, and you know there was a lot of threats and intimidation and physical attacks by people who were coming from the far right.
But you've been attacked physically quite a lot, though, haven't you?
Well over 200 times.
But and like you are quite a slight man, so do you fight back?
I run.
So that's the thing you do.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can see my teeth. They look fine, but they're all bonds. All my teeth are chipped and cracked from the various attacks.
But so, like, when you're going into a situation like that, like, because I just know that I've never been in a fight in my life, but I understand the adrenaline and the fear of when I know what might happen. So you must still, when you're about to do one of these, human rights things, you must be very scared.
I'm always scared, always nervous. My anxiety is twofold. Firstly, I fear failure, being caught out and rumbled before I get a chance to do what I plan to do. And secondly, the fear is that, I'll get arrested, perhaps beaten up. Amazingly, out of over 3,000 direct action protests that I've been involved in, this is not just, strolls from Hyde Park to Trafalgar Square, but, occupying buildings, sit-ins, defying the law for a noble, just cause, I believe. Over 3,000 of those protests, I only have one standing conviction, and that is for going into the pulpit of the then Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. George Carey, on Easter Sunday in 1998, and criticising his support for anti-gay discrimination. He was saying that gay people are not entitled to equal rights in law, and he was mobilising MPs to vote against gay equality. So when he wouldn't meet us, myself and six members of the LGBT group Outrage went to his cathedral on Easter Sunday. We didn't interrupt the sacred parts of the service. We waited for his sermon, and then we calmly walked into the pulpit, and I simply criticised him for supporting anti-gay laws, saying that discrimination is not a Christian value.
And why did you get arrested for that?
Because the church has unique and special privilege protection against any form of protest. So I was charged under the 1860 Ecclesiastical Courts Jurisdiction Act, formerly part of the Brawling Act of 1552, which prohibits any form of protest in a church, no matter how brief and peaceful.
So you pretty much were the first Pussy Riot.
Sort of. Only I didn't get the support that they got. I was denounced by most of the press and the media in this country for daring to interrupt a church service.
But the press quite like you now, though, don't they?
That's right. Yeah, there has been quite a change.
And so what was that? Because they know you've persevered and you weren't in it for your own goodness. You were actually always putting yourself on the line. Do you think that's where they realised, oh, Peter's quite
a
nice fellow?
Yeah, I think, there's a grudging respect. People may not agree with me or may not agree with me all the time, but they know that I've stuck by my principles, or at least I've tried to. And, until the last couple of years, I've never, ever been paid for this work. I did it all. So, and I did incredible financial hardship.
What did you do for money then?
What did I do for money?
Yeah.
In that period, I did bits of research. In addition to doing full-time activism and campaigning for human rights, I did bits of research and journalism and occasionally got paid for TV or media work. But I lived on about £8,000 a year. And it's only with the formation of my Peter Tatchell Foundation, which is a human rights lobbying organisation, that I've begun to get paid. But even so...
Well, because you're kind of the director.
I'm the director, yeah.
Right.
But even so, I probably get paid about half of what a director for a similar organisation would get. I'm not in it for the money. I don't want to live hand to mouth. Even to this day, I haven't got a washing machine or a shower, believe it or not. I live in a tiny one-bedroom flat, which is mixes as an office and a home.
Is that what the office
hardly,
is?
And there's hardly any room in this flat. And I have to navigate between all these piles of files and papers and posters and placards and everything.
Well, that's
but, I'm happy to do it because compared to human rights campaigners in many other countries, I've got off lightly. I haven't been imprisoned or tortured. I'm not, subjected to, police harassment and victimisation, at least not now. Yeah,
we've got a little surprise for you.
perhaps I was in the past, but not now.
But so is the Peter Thatchell Foundation, is that in your flat then?
Well, we also do have another small office where I now have two staff members who assist me. But we can't really cope with the volume. I mean, the number of requests we get every single day from people in Britain all over the world who've suffered hate crimes, discrimination.
But do you take donations in then? Is that what...
We do. In fact, we depend entirely on donations from well-wishers. People can go to the website.
Well, we'll
do PeterTatchellFoundation.org.
We'll play a track and then we'll talk more about what you're up to right now as well. This is Ash, Girl from Mars.
Do you remember the time when you were a girl from Mars? I don't know if you knew that. Oh, it's there, they're playing cards and you were into them and cigars. And she never told me her name. I still love you, the girl from Mars. On a cool summer night, fireflies and stars in the sky, gentle glowing light from your cigarette. The breeze blowing softly on my face reminds me of something else, something that in my memory's been misplaced. Suddenly all comes back, and as I look to the stars, I remember the time.
Had you dancing around your kitchen, Ash there, Girl from Mars. Still with me is Peter Thatchell, the human rights campaigner. Peter, for people who want to help you with your campaigns, how do they send donations?
Well, the first thing is please go to my website, www.
You don't need to do the W bit anymore.
PeterTatchellFoundation.org.
Right, and that's everything, all the information.
You'll see lots of information about what we're doing and campaign. You can click on the Join Us button, and you can sign up to receive our email bulletins, which we do one, two, or three a week.
How many members have you got?
To be honest, I don't know. Probably about 15,000 or something.
I thought there'd be more than that. Come on, English people!
And then you can click on the donate button as well, if you want.
But right.
The most important thing is to join and sort of... it's free to join. You just click on the thing, we'll send you those email campaign bulletins.
Sure.
And you can ignore the ones you're not interested in. But you'll find lots of interesting stuff that you probably never knew anything about.
Slightly off the point, can I tell you, you're smelling very nice today, Peter.
I'm smelling very nice.
Yeah, is that a perfume or is that from someone else?
It's from someone else. It's not from me.
Well, it suits you, is what I'm going to say then. But so what are you up to? Actually, if you don't mind me asking, what age are you?
I am 62.
See, now, at 62, people would be thinking of slowing down a little bit. But you look great for 62. But are you've no interest in kind of...
Retirement is boring.
Okay.
Now, I think perhaps another 30 years. Hopefully.
Well, you're that clean living that you can live live on till then. And David Cameron, what's his record like on human rights? He talks the talk a little bit.
Well, you know, to his credit, he did preside over a government that introduced same-sex marriage. He did repeal some of Labour's clampdowns on civil liberties. But his government has also gone the other way. For example, they tried to introduce early this year a new offence of causing nuisance or annoyance. Nuisance or annoyance.
Is this to stop people protesting?
Well, ostensibly to stop antisocial behaviour, possibly including protests.
Well, that's
but
the
definition. But the definition, nuisance and annoyance. It's so wide and so sweeping, so open to subjective interpretation, it was a threat and menace to liberty. So myself, I teamed up with the National Secular Society, even the Christian Institute, and we had a coalition, we campaigned, and successfully lobbied the House of Lords to vote it down. So that those two offences will no longer be part of a bill that's currently before Parliament.
Two things I want to ask before I'm going to let you get on to your next campaign. While I play a tune, that's how bad I feel about life. John Pilger as well, he's another... What is it about Australians? Like, you know, you seem to, when you come out of the woodwork, you're proper, like, good people. Like, are you friends with John Pilger?
I vaguely know him, and we're not close friends.
But, like, you're singing from the same hymn book, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a great admirer of his journalism and investigative reporting. Those programmes he does for ITV, and he's been doing them for years and years and years.
I know.
They're fantastic.
And that's what
brilliant exposés. The one about, you know, the abuse and mistreatment of the Aboriginal people in Australia a few months ago. That was a brilliant, brilliant corrective to the Australian government's propaganda.
But just because, like, you're so well informed about what's happening as well, I would just like to know, like, in light of Bob Crowe and Tony Benn dying, do you think there is a new breed of left-wing people who are going to try and change society? Or do you think this is, like, we're getting into centralised politics now?
I can't see the next Bob Crowe or the next Tony Benn. I mean, there are some individuals like John McDonnell and Jeremy Corbyn, two Labour MPs who are pretty good. But they're not of the... This is not disparaging them, but they haven't got the stature and the public recognition that Crowe and Benn had.
But the future seems a bit bleak then for kind of...
Well, I think it's changing a bit. I mean... I've pretty much given up on the Labour Party. I left Labour in 2000. I just thought it had deserted its social justice roots.
A long time ago, yeah.
And, you know, when they tried to rig the selection process for Mayor of London to block Keir Livingston, I thought, well
Ken's
they're not even a Democratic Party anymore.
Well, actually, Peter Thatcher, thank you
so much. So I'm now with the Greens, because I think they combine both the social justice issues that Labour once stood for...
Yeah.
With the green environmental protection issues. I think that's a good combination, you know, green and socialist, green and left. It's the hope of what society could be to avert what is very seriously a major, major threat to human civilization. We saw the NASA-funded report come out last week, which said that climate chaos and the instability of the world economy does potentially threaten the future of human civilization.
Well, everyone knows
we could go the way of the Romans, you know, or the Mayans, or the Aztecs.
Well, it seems to be going the way. Listen, Peter, thank you so much for coming in. I'm going to play a tune. And look, because you've reminded me, people keep on forgetting about Ken. Ken's still there. You're still there. There's a few years out there. So for you guys, I'm going to play Bay City Rollers, Give a Little Love. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you.
It's a and to find you're all wrapped up in love. And I found that you made a dream come true. Now I do believe in what they say. The sun comes shining through. We'll there is just we two, and the world goes by, but I just don't care. And I know that one day I'll find a way to be safe and sound within your heart. So until I do, I'm gonna give a little love, take a little love, be prepared to forsake a little love, and when the sun comes shining through, we'll know what to do. Give a little love, take a little love, be prepared to forsake a little love, and when the sun comes
Bay City Rollers. You weren't expecting that, were you? You listen to FUBAR. I'm Sean Hughes. Time for live music on a Sunday. Ivy and Gold, which is Rachel and Jamie. How are you?
Good.
Thank you. How are you?
You're starting a new movement. This is a new musical movement from Broxbourne, yeah?
That's correct, yeah.
So what else has come out of Broxbourne so far?
Sunday Girl.
Yeah, she's now known as Winnie Williams.
Right.
Parisa Louvel.
Yeah.
You're just making people up. Yeah.
I promise
they're real, they're real people.
So how did you two get together then?
I used to be in a metal band, believe it or not.
Lovely.
And her sister's old boyfriend produced our album. We met
at a barbecue.
I needed to do some songs for uni. Couldn't write songs. In steps Ray Ray. Saves my life.
And Ray, have you been singing with anyone else before that?
I've been singing my whole life. I used to go to a drama school, which I sang at, which was fun. That's where I learnt to sing. And then I just kind of went solo for a long time. Me and my guitar. I wasn't very good at the guitar. Dropped it a few times in some performances, so I thought, I need to rethink what I'm doing here. In steps, Jamie.
Well, I'm not much better at guitar.
It's good that you've both, like, seemed to, like, it's a bit like, obviously, you know, bigging up, but like Morrissey and Marr. You know what? They also
big comparison.
They also met at a barbecue.
Did they?
Yeah, they always say Johnny just called around his house, but it was a barbecue on a Morris's house at the time.
Really?
And so now the music is very far away from metal. So was that just something you were getting out of your system?
I was like 18, I think, and I played drums. I just wanted to be in a band.
So you were the drummer in the metal
band?
Yeah,
I was a drummer. Yeah.
And then what happened to that band?
We weren't very good. So we did a few tours.
They might be listening.
I mean, we were incredible. No, it just kind of fizzled out. People wanted to get real careers and earn some money. And we were doing like the toilet circuit in vans for years. So I went to uni and did commercial music. And
but so are you two, like, have you still got jobs and stuff now then? Yeah?
I'm at university.
I don't have a job at the moment because this kind of takes up all our time. But yeah, it's getting there. We've only just like really started doing it.
So you've brought out one EP so far.
Yes.
Yeah, we brought that out last April, but that was self-released, and it was just something we'd done in like our bedrooms and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way to do it, really, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I think more and more people do that now, because like there's people doing stuff in their bedrooms that's like industry standard.
People always say bedrooms. Why don't they say kitchens or sitting rooms?
No, maybe their mums don't let them set up in the kitchen.
Yeah. That should be the name of the record label.
Yeah.
Not being able to set up in your kitchen.
Not allowed in the kitchen.
But listen, what's the first track you're going to play for us?
We're going to play a track called Not Had Enough, I think.
Yes, that's the one.
Cool.
I look forward to it. Do you want me to count you in?
We can just go in whenever.
I just want to be part of the band, but you know, just
you can play the triangle if you want.
No, I just wanted to go, I don't want two, three.
Yeah.
Do it.
Ready? I don't want two, three.
Could I tune up? Sorry. Got some dud.
Right, so this is a. It was quite a short song.
Yeah.
So,
what did you think?
I thought it was very reminiscent of it's early kind of Jesus and the Mary Chain.
It's kind of a statement.
My part was massive.
It was subtle. Yeah. So, do you think. Are you ready now?
I might need to tune up if.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll play a track by. This is Crosby, Stills and Nash, and apparently this is recorded in their bedroom.
Wishing he could fly, I only to trip at the sound of goodbye. Wordlessly watching, he waits by the window and wonders at the empty place inside. Heartlessly helping himself to her bad dreams, he worries, did he hear a goodbye, or even hello? They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are four. Confusion has its cause. Love isn't lying, it's loose in a lady who lingers, saying she is lost and choking on hello.
Helplessly hoping, Crosby, Stills and Nash. We have Ivy and Gold. Rachel, who's your favourite, Crosby, Stills or Nash?
Oh, I don't know.
Great stuff, good answer, good answer.
That's a hard question.
You could have just said one of
them. My dad will hate me for not answering that.
Hate's a strong emotion. So, Jamie, have you learned how to tune the guitar?
Well, I've tried. I've given it a whirl.
God, you're really giving your all here for FUBAR.
I'm a piano player, so this is...
I thought you were a drummer a minute ago. You're schizophrenic of some description.
I just make it up as I go along.
So are you ready? Do you want me to give you the...
I think we're actually ready this time.
I'm going to give you the count down this time rather than up. Right? So
see how it works out.
And a 3, 2, 1.
Run, there's a fire burning me down. Gone, you left me like a ghost in an empty town. She tastes the same, we fall and we fall again. Learn, in desire, we all will drown. I can't call for help, it's holding me down in the silence. And as my lungs pour out, there's no escape, no hand to take to bring me around. I walk alone down this road, I walk alone. Oh, carries on a groaning stone. And I can't stop, I'm addicted, locked in on my own. It's a dangerous game, we fall and we fall again. Learn in desire, we only have now. I can't call for help, it's holding me down in the silence. And as my lungs bow around, there's no escape, my hands are dead to bring me round. I walk alone down this road, I walk alone in your shadow. I walk alone and still you know that I've not had enough. I've not had enough, not had enough. On like a rolling, like a rolling stone. We fall, we fall, we fall again. We fall, we fall, we fall again. I walk alone down this road, I walk alone.
Ivan Gold, what was the name of that song again?
It's called Not Had Enough.
And yeah, we were walking down that road on your own a lot there, Rachel, weren't you? It's
quite a lonely
I really
soul.
Was.
I was quite worried about you there for a little bit. And have you recorded that?
That's recorded. Yes. It's going to be, it's out now actually, I believe. Our merch store is up live today.
Cool.
So if you go and visit that at ivyandgoldofficial.com.
And so the recorded version, I take it, is much more metal, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's metal, sort of pinched harmonics all over it.
No, but so
no, it's kind of like sort of poppy, bit dancey.
Dancey, yeah? What, so there's beats?
Yeah.
Okay.
Four on the floor going there.
And so what's the process? Who writes the songs?
Both of us.
Normally how it goes is I'll sit in our little bedroom studio.
Kitchen studio.
We'll be moving into the kitchen now for sure. Yeah, yeah. Much prefer that, near all the food in the fridge and that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it can be anything. Like it might be a kick drum, and I'll start a song from there, or a sample, or just anything. Build the song.
Then you give it to me.
Ray does her vocals, makes it sound pretty.
And do you write all the lyrics then, Rachel?
Yes.
So why were you walking down that road on your own?
It's not actually about me or any situation to do with me, that song. It's kind of inspiration from friends' lives.
What?
Like bad boy troubles.
Why was your friend walking down that road on his own?
She was going out with a particular guy that she really liked. She kept screwing her over, but she just couldn't quite have enough of him. Couldn't leave him.
Well, there's a book, actually, that might help you that George from Big Brother is bringing out.
Right.
I'll get you a copy of that for your friend.
I'm sure I'm very grateful.
Sounds very useful.
Yeah. Have you done lots of live shows yet, or is it relatively new?
We've done a few live shows, probably like five, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a lot. I would have said we haven't really started yet,
no.
Sean.
Okay. Yeah. No. I thought like above.
If you can count them on your hand,
above three is established, is it?
You're not really a live band, yeah. But how many people are in the band then?
Just us.
Just us two.
All right. So you just use samples.
Yeah. Just like backing and stuff. I play keys. Yeah, we're just starting out, so we're sort of starting off small. Keeping it insular rather than relying on useless session musicians to ruin our songs.
Well, you know the Musicians Union are listening here, so...
Yeah. give us some free musicians and we'll take them.
And you're going to do another song, so what's this song then?
Lions.
Sorry?
It's called Lions.
It's just about you, yeah.
It's about me, yeah. I hope it's not about, no, it's not about me.
So what's this song about? So I'd like to kind of know.
It's about people that you don't like, and there's nothing, you have to get along with them. And you just have to.
What, like relatives type thing?
Maybe relatives.
Perhaps.
Okay, right. See, now we can listen with added interest that obviously Rachel doesn't get on with one of her relations.
Oh, God, what have I done? What have I started?
Big old I can't even remember where you're from, really.
Broxbourne,
which is Hearts. Yeah, big up Hearts.
Woo.
What football team do you support, Jamie?
Shrewsbury Town.
Good work. Okay, yeah. Do you want a countdown or are you good on your own on this one?
I think we can manage this on our own this time, unless you want to.
I'd love to be part. Yeah.
Yeah, go for it then.
And a 3, 2, 1.
Change where the wind goes all the time. You're changing all the time. Your colors have always stayed the same. In your eyes, we're never safe. You can see it, you are blind. And as the wind blows, you're hunting with the crows in the night. You won't stop to hold it tight. Your colors have always stayed the same. In your eyes, we're never safe.
Ivy and Gold there with Lions. But, Rachel, I have to point out, you can tame lions. Have you
it
not
depends
been?
What ones.
You know, just like I don't agree with circus animals, but they do tend to use the tame the lions for the shows.
Lots of those guys get eaten, though, don't they?
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying, like, it's bulletproof, but yeah, I'm just saying, in general, you can
I think
tame
lions. The
lions
are just sort of playing along with it, and then they go, actually, I'm not keen.
Like, I know it's a metaphor as well, so I shouldn't really, but...
Don't ruin the metaphor. What are you doing?
Well, I'm just trying to get off the hook. Well,
maybe that's our next career path. Who
no,
knows?
The song obviously is about Rachel and her aunt. That's what you didn't know. Which is...
Sorry, auntie.
So Rachel, you're studying at the moment then, yeah?
Yes.
So is that just... what are you studying?
Creative writing.
Okay.
At Greenwich.
Well, Greenwich, okay.
Yeah.
So are you both living in London now then?
No, Broxbourne.
No, good.
Oh, you're commuting. Commuting.
We're commuting here. Yeah.
Commuting.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, you can do the travel report for us next week.
We'll see. Always oh, yeah, awful. Okay. There you go, done.
So, but are you both from the area?
I am.
I'm from Shropshire, Ludlow.
Right. So, what had you going down to Broxbourne?
That's how they speak. How did you know?
I did commercial music at Westminster, so I moved to lovely Kilburn initially. And then moved out to Broxbourne because London's too expensive for students.
Yeah, but you're not a student anymore, though.
No, but I was.
Yeah.
And now I'm a musician. I definitely can't afford to live in London.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you won't be getting any session musician work after that slight you said about session musicians earlier on. So, so you it sounds lovely. What would your inspiration be voice-wise? Obviously, you know, is there certain female kind of singers that you really look up to?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love Stevie Nicks. She's my number one. And then Tori Amos. I love Tori Amos.
Kate Bush?
Oh, yeah. I've had some people say I sound a bit like Kate Bush.
There's a hint of it.
That's a good compliment. That. I mean, yeah. I wish, but...
Yeah,
she, I'll definitely take that.
She had an album, wasn't it, Lionheart or something? There's more than one connection there. That's what I'm saying. And so, but weirdly, you mentioned... Because, up till about 5 years ago, it was a very male-orientated business. And now women have taken over completely. But
yeah, they really have.
you didn't mention any of the newbies.
Ooh, I really like London Grammar.
Right.
I love Florence and the Machine.
Right, so that's more like her. I had to get it out of you.
Oh, Charlotte O.C., yeah, she's great.
And what about yourself? So obviously you were a metalhead at the start, Jamie.
Yeah, well, kind of. I always had quite an eclectic music taste. So when I was in this metal band, I was probably had like Sugar Babes on my playlist or something.
So they're still going. They just kicked you out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, they disbanded a few years ago, but they went on without me for a while. So.
And what
kind of miss me that much?
Just the name of a couple of songs that you used to do because I like metal songs.
Hear My Words.
That's fairly tame.
Your Life Is Mine. What else did we have? At Least It's Not Light.
I think so. You were metal light, really, weren't
more
you?
Like. I think we thought we were more alternative than we were.
Okay.
We thought we were pretty good, but we weren't really. We didn't get very far.
So. I actually went to see their band. I didn't even realise who you were, which is weird.
Yeah,
because he was the drummer.
A long time ago, yeah.
Rachel, <it's> no one knows the drummer.
Rachel, are you always looking at the singer, yeah?
Yeah, so, pretty much.
And so you said you can play a little bit of guitar.
I try. I dabble.
But is there something you're going to continue to do? Or
yeah, I think it's good to know an instrument.
So. And can you do any keys?
I try with keys. I can't sing and play piano at the same time, though.
What is wrong with you?
Extreme difficulty with that. Unless it's, like, really compy, easy chords. Anything above that, I'm a bit like, ooh, no, no.
A friend of mine used to be the road manager for Depeche Mode.
Okay.
And they were doing this big gig in Brazil, you know, top proper 80,000. And it was a time Andy Fletcher had his breakdown and said, I'm not going on. And they pretty much said to the road manager, you're doing the gig. And nice. They just put dots
really
on the keys.
Really? So,
which is
that's what I do.
So like,
that's
so he was
trick.
On stage in front of 60,000 people going, di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-
We've got our EP launch next Wednesday.
Where are you doing that?
Seabright Arms, East London.
Right, so that'll be the sixth gig.
Yeah, the sixth and most important gig.
Right, so, yeah, and so have you invited some bigwigs?
I don't know.
I mean, Peter Stringfellow, he's got a big wig.
I'll have to leave that to our manager, Guy. He's responsible for
that. Is that Guy just there?
Yeah.
Guy looks very young to be a manager.
Yeah, we don't know how old he is.
Well, I thought he was young.
Yeah, he's got tattoos.
I was wrong.
33.
Wow.
He looks younger than me. That's not good, is it?
So, well, look, thanks so much for coming in, and good luck with the... So tell us again where the launch is for people in case they want
to... Seabright Arms, so come on down and check
it
out.
Is that a pub, is it?
Yeah, I think so. It's.
Why do you keep on looking at your manager?
Because he sorts that stuff out. I don't know about it. It's reassuring.
He's just organised.
And where did you meet this manager, by the way? Was it?
He found us
the guy walking down the road, lonely, tamed like a lion?
Yeah, we wanted to look official.
I was singing it to myself, and there he was.
Are you from the Roxbourne? The moon?
I'm not.
Right,
I'm from sunny Wales.
Wales, you're letting some outsiders into your little circle there, Ivy and Gold.
Is that your Welsh accent?
That's Bristol.
No,
Blimey.
Of course it wasn't. No, my Welsh
like
accent.
The Wurzels or something.
My Welsh accent is this. I'm bloody furious.
Is that like Tom Jones?
Nice. Oh, Tom Jones.
Dance with your grandmother, I did.
Yeah, so listen, good luck at the launch, and we'll keep an eye out for you. And so for people who are, well, just, yeah, they can go on your site, which is, you have to say official.
IronGoldOfficial.com.
Why is it official?
I don't know, for all the impersonators, maybe.
Yeah.
From the five gigs, you've had people going, well, I'm going to set up my own site here.
I think there's an Ivy and Gold flower company.
There is, yeah.
So don't get confused with that. Cause,
were you happy that I didn't ask the cliché where did the name come from?
Yeah, you can ask it if you want.
No, I'm not. You're going now. I'm playing a track. David Bowie. Well, listen, that's let's keep on listening to FUBAR, or as I like to call it,
FUBAR. Radio worth paying for.
Yeah, you tell me about it. Thanks for all the guests. Lucy Porter's on with us next week, so that's something to look forward to. And let's play us out with Sinead O'Connor, that very sensible lady. She's this is a beautiful track. You've been listening to Sean Hughes on FUBAR. Thank you so much for listening. And here's I Had a Baby by Sinead O'Connor.
But I had a baby.